if we're talking about eco-inspiration, we must be chatting with John Marshall Roberts, who has written a book that I highly recommend called Igniting Inspiration, a Persuasion Manual for Visionaries. And John is very kind to join us today because it's his birthday. Happy birthday, John, and thanks for being on the Green Front with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
We want to talk today about an article you wrote called Leveraging Purpose, the Fourth Bottom Line. And, of course, the triple bottom line is people, profits, and planet. Purpose, you add. What do you mean by that?
Well, thanks for asking. Actually, the original title was The Forgotten Bottom Line, but they edited it to fourth. And I thought the word was forgotten is pretty important because what I'm getting at here is that those of us who care about the environment and who want to make a difference often get so caught up in the Kool-Aid that we've been drinking that we don't realize that other people don't really care about this necessarily, and that what really gets through to people is not our jargon but really a sense of purpose, this deep human need that we have to be a part of something bigger and to do the right thing.
That's the big secret, isn't it? That this feels good. You know, it's always astounded me, all the green conferences I've gone to, from, you know, the recycling conferences I started covering back last century in 1997 with Trash Talk, to climate change gatherings with mayors from around the country sharing information. There's a sense of energy and excitement and really, dare I say, upbeat, you know, in terms of mood. And that's kind of paradoxical, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think the opportunity, just understanding how humans tick, is the most important thing, and that is that we're all dying to express ourselves on behalf of something that we care about. It's just one of the deepest needs that we have. And those of us who've already found our purpose, we get to the task of trying to make it happen. We sometimes forget that other people haven't already joined in at that level. And so what I've put together is some strategies on how you could communicate in a way that will build that gut-level desire on the part of people who normally wouldn't care.
And you talk about how historically transformational leaders have used storytelling to communicate purpose. And so you have, I guess, four or five principles here. I'll just touch on them, and hopefully you can expand. Principle number one is create an enemy. The second is envision a pleasurable heaven. That's the carrot, as you say. And then third, provide a painful hell. That's the stick. Least, invite your hero to action. So touch on all those, if you will.
Ooh, absolutely. And this, to anybody who's ever heard of Joseph Campbell, who did a wonderful interview of The Power of Myth with Bill Moyer some years back, he showed, and also he wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, he showed that people make sense of the world through story, and that almost all the hero myths from the beginning of time seem to fit into within a basic structure that I've kind of outlined the basic principles for. And when we can organize our environmental quest, our environmental mission, and other people's minds according to this basic mythological structure, it's just amazing how much energy we can unleash. So create an enemy. Well, by the way, this doesn't mean we have to falsely vilify people who don't need it, out of the blue, or judge people. For example, Obama used this principle in his campaign. He created an enemy, but the enemy was our own cynicism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
yeah,
as I say on the Green Front, you know, we've seen the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Right, exactly. It's deep into the way we make sense of the world. In fact, it's so deep sometimes we just take it for granted. It's like trying to describe water to a fish. But the basic fact is that our mind thinks in opposites, and creating some energy, something to rally against, gets us going. And that can happen within an organization very easily through the competition and people who might be taking some of our product shares, stuff like that.
So a great bad guy always gets the hero moving. That's the point there. Okay, next, envision a pleasurable heaven.
Well, and that's, you know, and heaven is just something positive that we're looking forward to. I think this is one where people who get into the doom and gloom of it sometimes forget that we also need a heaven. We get into looking at the hell, which is the waters rising and all the uncertainty that's going to happen once the ice caps melt and temperatures go up. But what are we really striving for? Because it's that positive vision of what we're going to accomplish together that really gets us motivated to look at this. And especially for people who haven't already looked at this, what's going to draw them to want to look at a bunch of misery? They need to feel like there's going to be something great to come out of it.
In this lifetime.
In this lifetime. And what you said was also true, which is that it doesn't even have to be in the distant future. Being part of a community working to solve a problem is itself an intrinsically enjoyable experience, which we can include.
And you missed last week's show, and we missed you, but we had the co-founder of Transition Towns in the USA, a woman who has brought that concept over from the UK, and talking about how not only are they addressing, you know, the need to prepare for climate change and peak oil, but the need to have community and to communicate with one's community, and it's just taking off.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I have to tell you, on a very personal level, the amount of gratitude and joy that I felt once I burned through a lot of my fears around what was going to, you know, the shock of realizing that our climate was going to pot. But what's happened for me now, anyway, is as I've burned through that, what I really feel is so excited that we as a species are waking up and becoming conscious. Because the truth of the matter is, I know there are a lot of people, and I was one of them, who wasn't really that happy with the way it was before. We're living unconsciously, trying to consume in order to make ourselves feel better. Well, that's not a good way to live. I think this is a hugely exciting moment for us, and I think great leaders are the ones who can help us see that.
Okay, so before we get too Pollyanna-ish here, let's talk about providing a painful hell.
Well, you know, and I think we've gotten pretty good at that. And you know, by the way, I think the shame of being Pollyanna-ish is part of the problem. I think joy is a really good thing, and I think that authentic joy is good. Now, I think false positives aren't. So yes, there is that. Now, the hell, that is what motivates people. You know, I worked as a hypnotherapist to help people quit smoking for many years, and I still do that from time to time. Keeps me honest. And what I've found is that they respond to the idea that they're going to die of cancer. And so they need to be aware of that, and that's what motivates people, and it's really the combination of having that hell and that heaven that kind of gives people the freedom to choose.
Yeah, and what we're leaving to our children, of course, should make any parent pay attention, if nothing else.
It's true, and unfortunately, what you find developmentally is that over time, people start learning from joy more than from pain, but that old adage, people don't change until the pain of not changing outweighs the pain of changing, has a lot of truth, especially for people who are not as conscious of these topics.
Yeah, and I think it's two sides of maybe the same coin. You know, really, a lot of people have traditionally thought environmentalists, you know, they think of them as protesters and angry, you know, rebels, really, and radicals, when I find most environmentalists, quote, are coming from a place of love and sheer appreciation for what we've been given and a desire to protect it for others. I don't think it gets more positive than that. Another one of those paradoxes.
Absolutely, and I think that's the challenge. You know, I meet so many amazing people who care about the world. I know, you know, and love it and want to make it to work and enjoy the process, but they are definitely not perceived as loving the world and wanting to make it work when they come at people with that righteous indignation. Now, what I feel is that a lot of that comes from a frustration they have at not being able to communicate effectively, which is why I've written this book and I've given my professional life over to helping create tools so that these frustrated people who care can not be frustrated and in fact can be inspired and more effective.
Okay, last but not least, principle number 4, invite your hero to action.
Right, and that's where the real payoff is. And so, and this happens organically, it happens naturally. I mean, if you've been able to think through your present work situation, I want to make clear, too, this isn't just some abstract thing, you know, planetary level. This can be in an organization. If you have shown an enemy of some kind that they need to overcome, even if it's their own emotions, if you've shown a pleasurable future you can create and a painful hell that's going to happen if you don't act soon, then the inviting to action happens naturally out of that because it becomes clear. So all you got to do is put a name to it and ask a question of your coworkers, of your customers, and that is, will you do X, Y, or Z, which falls naturally in line with what they would want to do given the setup that you've done before.
I just want to read a quote here at the bottom of the article. With the right communication tools at our disposal, we can access this universal longing and help those around us embrace the better angels of their nature in the service of every bottom line.
Wow, it's a mouthful.
You wrote that. Those are your words.
Feels like someone smarter than me wrote it. But yeah, I mean, it's the truth is what it is.
About appealing to people's higher selves, and nothing feels better than being our highest selves, and nothing is needed more than that right now.
Absolutely, and I think that's why it's important. I mean, will psychobabble save the planet? Well, you know, I actually think to some extent it will. I mean, people out there aren't worried; they don't care about carbon footprints as much as they care about being happy. And as much as we can start to have them see environmentalism as an opportunity for them to be happier, that's when we're going to get everybody on board.
Wow. Well, it is your birthday, and I wish all your green dreams will come true, John Marshall Roberts. For those of you just joining us, John is a strategic communications consultant at the Evanston Design Group that is based in Los Angeles, and they're a sustainable branding, messaging, and design firm, and, of course, author of the book that I recommend called Igniting Inspiration and Persuasion Manual for Visionaries. And what are we going to talk about next time, John? What are some other articles that you're excited about?
Well, check in with me next week. I have about 80 different ideas a minute, so we'll work on it.
How are you able to keep up with yourself? I guess that's how you
I'm not really. I'm doing the best I can. But thank you for having me.
Thank you, and we will check in with you next time. And